It's time to buy in. You're listening to the Noble Capital Radio Hour. Now, let's start the hour.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Noble Capital Radio Hour, where we explore investment strategies for the modern financial landscape. I'm your host, Chris Ragland, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Romney Navarro. Normally, we have our other co-host, Mr. Jaden Newman, but he is out of town. So we have a substitution in order here, and we are joined by Mr. Grady Collins, our fourth business partner at Noble Capital. Welcome to the show today, guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Grady.
You know, it's kind of funny because we actually joke about Grady occasionally, knowing that he doesn't actually listen to these. Thanks a lot, Grady. So we throw a lot of jokes at him, but it's going to be really awkward because he's here today. So I don't know.
Maybe it won't be awkward at all. I'm pretty used to it.
You're about 10-15% of our content just in general, though.
Really?
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, we're not three guys that just make fun of Grady Collins all day. No, actually, we are an alternative investment company, Noble Capital. We focus on retirement planning, private lending, and real estate. If you want to know more about us, you can find us at noblecapital.com.
Yeah, we're also available on all of the social platforms, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And frankly, if you want to come and visit us at one of our upcoming retirement dinners, or retirement blueprint dinners, go ahead and text the word SECURE, SECURE, to the number 313131.
That's
that
right.
Pretty good.
That's a great way to get a hold of us. And I would say this, hey, thank you for all of our listeners out there that commented and put questions on our social media platforms. And that's actually where we use to drive today's show. So, you know, last week we talked about essentially the show was the economy is great until it's not. And we're talking about essentially how you can use retirement planning strategies to plan against, you know, risk mitigation strategies is really what last week was about. But we glazed over very high level this idea of private lending. And we had a couple of questions about that on social media. So that's one of the directions we're taking the show today, is we're really going to reintroduce that. And essentially from the ground up, we're going to talk about how this strategy was created at Noble Capital, how we started that, and how it evolved into essentially an institutionally rated device, which we can talk about that too, that you can use inside of your investment portfolio, particularly for those of you looking to create income streams in retirement.
Yeah, I think what happened here is we were actually challenged that, hey, I could just do this on my own.
Yeah,
that's one of those, right?
You know, and you know what's funny is I got a phone call from one of our lenders the other day, and he literally was like, I'm looking at this house. I put it under contract. I'm going to do this on my own. And I was like, oh, this is going to be great. So he started asking me some questions, and I answered a few, and then I started asking him some questions. And I was like, oh, so, you know, what's your construction budget? What are you going to build for? What'd you buy the lot at? Where is it located? And I really started just hitting him like I would with anyone that says, hey, I think I've got this really great investment opportunity. And he started piecing it together himself, actually. I didn't need to lead him too quickly to water, you know. And I was like, oh, so, well, hold on a minute. If you bought it for this and you put your are you going to sell it? What are you going to sell it for? And we started backing in, and he was like, oh, man, this isn't a good deal, is it?
Or God, that's a lot of work.
It's also a lot of work. I was like, this is your full-time job for the next 6 months. You know that, right? This is what you're going to do?
That's really something, man. We were talking about in an interview that we had with somebody just the other day about the concept of being a lender, very passive, and the concept of being a investor, kind of borrower on the street, incredibly active. You're an operator. You're a business owner when you're flipping one of these houses or doing one of these deals.
That's one of my biggest criticisms of these, I don't know what you want to call them, these big events on how to get in this industry kind of thing, is they will tell people that you can do this on the side. It's a part-time job. It's a great way to ease into real estate investing. And I'm like, wrong answer. Like, if you're not prepared to do this full-time, do not do this. That you must be an expert in this if you want to ensure, you know, your best chances for success.
Well, and on TV, it only takes an hour.
That's right.
Everything turns out positive.
Right. And I love
you
the
never
budgets
see any
too.
That lose right. money on their flips.
And the budgets with the little ching signs in terms of like making all this money.
So
like,
easy.
I'm like, no. The paint is not wet when people are looking at your property. That's not how it really
and
works.
And you don't know. I've had a few lenders actually call me that have tried lending the money out to an individual on their own that now have a problem project and they need our help getting out of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about, the DIY concept. Like, I want to do this on my own. My buddy wants to do this thing. And I mean, I guess anybody could do anything, but you're working when you're doing that. So anyway, that's one of the cool things I think we're talking about. We were challenged to like, hey, we could do this thing on our own. Let's see if we can or can't. Let's tell you a little bit about how we've done it. Right. So here we go. We are actually going to introduce this week's or every week's favorite segment, Sean on the Street, right now.
This is Sean on the Street. And this week, we're going to go out into the wide world, and we're going to find some people to talk to about, well, furniture.
This is going to seem like a completely random question. If you needed a new piece of furniture and you had the option, would you A, buy it already made, B, assemble furniture from IKEA, or C, custom build it yourself?
It's interesting because I own a major business here in Austin, and we buy all of the furniture for the business through IKEA. We assemble everything ourselves. In terms of my home, I used to do custom furniture, but I never really got what I expected out of it. It was never the quality that I had hoped for when I compared it to what I could get off the shelf. And so most often, even furniture for the home, I'm buying it online, ready-made, delivered, installed.
Why do you do that then?
The ease of it, simplicity, busy life, time is money.
Right, so it's kind of the trade-off between maybe buying something pre-made and custom building it, right? You get kind of a little bit of the best of both worlds, maybe?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Look,
we all want the best we can get for the best dollar we can get.
And sure.
The quality of what you can order online and have delivered and ready, it's not that different than custom built on a day-to-day use basis. The prestige of getting something custom built is lost when it's sitting in your bedroom, you know?
So. Yeah. All right, great. If you needed a new piece of furniture, would you A, buy it already made, B, assemble a piece of furniture from IKEA, or C, custom build it yourself?
I was looking for desks, and IKEA actually had one for like $700, and I was like, man, that's too expensive to get started. I was like, what can I do? Like, I got the desktop from IKEA, and then it just kind of like lifted it up with like bed risers.
Okay. Right?
And so it just kind of like did ultimate DIY. It wasn't the prettiest thing, but it had the function of it. And so it was just, I don't know, it was like cool idea of just being like adventurous with it, I guess.
So it served the purpose. You didn't have the $700, but you made it work.
Yeah, so I made it work with like $300, and I got a monitor out of it too.
Nice.
So like that's just how I'm...
That's the ultimate DIY right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's just... If I can save $50 an hour, I'm all for it.
Yeah, me too. And when you have to make it work, you make it work, right?
Yeah,
totally.
Exactly.
Let's say that you needed to buy a new piece of furniture, and you had the option. Would you A, custom build it yourself, B, assemble a piece of furniture from IKEA, or C, buy it already completely made?
In that order is exactly what I would do. If I had the time and the resources, I would certainly rather custom build it myself.
Okay.
If I don't, I'd probably like to save a couple bucks and get it from IKEA. And if my girlfriend has her way, which she will, it's going to be option C. So.
Okay. Fair enough. There's a lot of influencing factors there.
Oh, yeah.
So you said you would prefer to custom build it yourself. Why is that?
I mean, I've always done hands-on.
I've always,
you know, when I was like 20 years old, I built my own arcade cabinet, you know, so it's just something I've always done.
DIY so, kind
yeah,
of guy.
Yeah, that's the world I come from, so I enjoy that.
Do you feel the quality's different?
Yeah, mine's a lot worse.
Yours is a lot worse. But it's yours, right?
Yeah, but it's mine.
For better or worse, this has been Sean on the Street with the Noble Capital Radio Hour. Back to you, Chris.
All right. Well, thanks, Sean. We're talking about building things from the ground up, and I think that's his analogy here with the furniture. It's interesting when you're offered choices on something that maybe you weren't prepared for, you kind of quickly come to a rational decision. You know, like, yeah, I'd love to do it myself, but let's be real. I'd probably need to save some money, and if I don't have the time to build it, I'm just going to buy it. You know, convenience.
AKA the best option. Yeah.
Also the best option. I'm just going to go down here and do this thing down here.
Last week, I think Sean was in the Amazon rainforest. Dude, the CP was like on the mean streets of New York City, 42nd and Lex.
Listen, if you're not from Austin, it's not like he's recording in a zoo, but we have these birds called grackles, and that's what that was in the background. So good times there. Yeah, it did sound like he was in the San Antonio Zoo. But hey, in the minute we got before we go to break here, I think I get it. I think I see, understand where he was going with this. It's like, yes, we would all love custom, and yes, we would all love to take the time to build stuff ourselves in order to save some of that. But when it comes back to the real value, you know, getting something right off the shelf that works sometimes is the best answer, because time is money and we only have limited time.
Yeah. And so many people spend time doing the DIY, and next thing you know, I think somebody said it's which is a better quality, off the shelf or DIY? He's like, off the shelf.
Yeah.
It's always worse.
Also, I think we need to send an invoice to IKEA for endorsements.
So yeah.
Does that happen?
It's about 12 placements right
yeah,
there.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, how many times did we say that product name? That was awesome. So, anyway, no, but I think that was good. We'll talk about this. We're going to go to break here in just a second. And when we get back, we're going to essentially walk you through building a private lending institution from the ground up, which is what we've done and allowed you, our listeners, our investors, to participate in that. Hang in there. We'll be right back.
You're tuned in to the Noble Capital Radio Hour.
And welcome back to the Noble Capital Radio Hour. I'm your host, Chris Ragland, where this week we are discussing the process of building a new investment model. Specifically, we're talking about private lending. What is private lending? We're going to deconstruct that a little bit for you. Talk about our marketplace, our investment strategy for private lending, and how it can work in your portfolio. Talking to you specifically, those of you in the preservation phase of your life cycle of money, what we've talked about for the last couple of episodes here. So we're digging into private lending. Thank you to those of you on our social media that said, tell me more about this. If you want to read up on it and learn more about it, you can do that at our website. That's at noblecapital.com.
Yeah, you know what? I did not mention some dates in the previous segment, so let's talk about that. We've actually got retirement blueprint dinners coming up in Dallas and in Austin, and that is Dallas on Wednesday, June 13th. And Austin on Thursday, June 14th. To register for that, real simple, text the word SECURE, SECURE, to 313131.
You know what we didn't warn Grady about, besides the fact that we joke about him quite often when he's not here, but we actually have this thing. We're trying to be better public speakers.
Oh, yeah.
And we track how many times we say the word like or eh, or basically filler, right? And it seems kind of nerdy, but I mean, we're all about doing this, and we turned it into something cool. We actually count this and track the number, and then we assign a dollar value to it, and we donate that money out to essentially a nonprofit here in Central Texas that works on affordable housing. So Grady, just be aware, every time you say one of those words, those filler words, like it costs us
cha-ching
money.
Well, yeah. I better just get the checkbook out now because I have a couple of things against me. Number one, I was born and raised in Louisiana. And I lived for 8 years in Philadelphia. So those two dialects
the
together.
The capital of
So with those two dialects in the last 35 years, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, you're just totally, totally out of the bag on this one. Okay. All right. Well, at least now you know. So we'll keep track of it.
Let me actually give a little bit of a score. So we actually owe somebody $386
That's
right
good.
Now.
Can I go ahead and say six or seven of them?
Just get them out of your system. Just leave. Yeah, definitely leave your checkbook. But you know what's funny? You're winning, Chris. You are responsible for 48% of our es, or you knows.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So fortunate. That's why I don't talk a whole lot.
I was going to say, as a percentage of talk time, I'm probably doing just fine.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into this. Private
whose
lending.
Job is it, by the way, to count them?
Sean, can you believe he has to do that?
Yeah, Sean.
While he's out on the street.
Sean
or clicker.
He's got a clicker at home on Sundays. He's just clicking along. It's like, oh, these guys, jeez.
I hope he's getting paid overtime for that.
I don't know, man. Oh, boy. Okay, so private lending. What is this? I'm going to give you it in a nutshell, and then we're going to talk about it. But, you know, you watch all this stuff on television. You see these shows of people flipping houses or building new homes, and that's really fun. But it's not really how it works. In the real world, these real estate investors that are out there in their communities are coming to companies like Noble Capital, and they're saying, hey, I need a loan. I need a portion of the finance to accomplish the acquisition, renovation, and sales of this product here. And we do that. So that's what private lending is. We're essentially acting as a lender to these individuals, these investors that are out there on the streets that are renovating and building new homes. So they come to us. And what we've done is created a vehicle where investors can actually participate in that. So you think about this. You can participate in this real estate vehicle, this entire industry of renovation that's going on out there without actually having to pick up a hammer and get your hands dirty. So that's really what we were talking about a minute ago in Sean on the Street was, yes, it kind of sounds fun, but it's an enormous amount of work.
Yeah.
Especially like you talked about the lender that was with me last week, and he was like, oh, I'm going to do this. And then we really broke it down, and he's like, oh, I'm not going to do this.
Well, that's the thing, man. So a lot of people say that they could just do it on their own, and you can. Like I said, we could do it on our own. We actually started with just a couple of deals. I mean, remember that deal down in South Austin? It was somebody needed to pull cash out of a property that they've owned for a few years or whatever.
No, I remember the deal.
That was the very first one that we collectively did together.
Yeah.
It was a great deal. And in hindsight, it was a phenomenal deal. But it was one deal, and it took about four or five of us to put that thing together.
Right.
And that was our full-time job.
Yeah, and someone had to, you know, follow up on it and make sure that the loan payments were being made. And at the time, that was actually what Grady did. He managed the loan servicing portion of the company.
And we had to drive by it every so often to make sure that, you know, everything was
going well. And that's easy. Being the lender is, quote, easy compared to being the person actually doing a project and actually doing the work on the property. So, you know, this space is a very rapidly growing and maturing space. In fact, some of the big names that you think of when you think of investment banks have started to enter this space. I mean, literally, we're talking about Goldman, Blackstone, like really, really big institutional players. They've watched our industry mature over time, and they're saying, okay, it's got some tenure now, some maturity. There are some expert operators in the place. We want to participate too. And they're picking up that yield. So what we've been providing to our investors for years now as a viable product, now the institutional players are saying, hey, we're going to come in here and play too, which is really interesting.
And that's the part that's really interesting to me, because those guys on Wall Street don't get to drive by that property, right? That same property in South Austin, that little neighborhood that you and I drove nearby Love Field the other day.
Right.
They don't drive by that.
No, and they don't understand the characteristics of one street can make all the difference. Or even the same street. Like Dallas is notorious for that. Dallas, one side of the street versus the other side of the same street is a wildly different neighborhood in terms of valuation.
Yeah, and that's the thing. So you could do one deal. But it's that scale that really starts to stress the model. And that's kind of where we're at. We're in that place where it's like, if we're going to compare furniture like Sean on the Street did, right?
Right.
It was off the shelf. It was build it yourself or total craftsman type job.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're actually all talking about off the shelf. We're talking about custom furniture versus just mass production furniture. And we live in the custom space.
Well, we do. But, you know, when we started, there's no model for this.
No.
I mean, we literally, along with Jaden, essentially crafted this model and created it. And a lot of it came from some really difficult lessons learned through the recession. So this company was formed prior to the recession. We're talking about 2002, and has always been involved in real estate at one level or another. But we've taken a lot of the lessons through that recession and created this product that you can participate. So what are we talking about? For our investors, they're earning between 6%, 7%, 8% on their money on an annualized basis. But there's some really interesting pieces here. First of all, it's secured by something tangible. It's secured by actual real estate. And then the next piece is we're not at market value. You are not purchasing property at retail when you're the lender. You're only lending at a maximum of 70 cents on the dollar. So we've actually broken this entire thing down on some other segments. So we're not going to get into deal structure here, but it's not a retail investment. It's so much better than that because of this level of security that you have.
Yes, it's definitely a model that we kind of had to start many years ago. It's been often duplicated, but never replicated. We've had quite a few other small ones pop up around the state of Texas that didn't survive the last recession, and we did.
That's right.
Because number one, we had probably 5 or 6 years under our belt before that first recession hit, and we were a little prepared for it, unlike most people were. So we're still standing even after the last recession, and we're going to be standing going forward.
Yeah, you're essentially our fund manager. You're the CFO of Noble Capital. So you manage all things as they relate to dollars. Tell the listeners a little bit about the investment philosophy just in general. What do we do to make sure things go according to plan?
Well, my main philosophy, and maybe it's just the pessimist in me, is I always prepare to fail. I don't expect to fail, but I always prepare to fail. And I like to use sports analogies because other than money and banking, that's all I really know is sports. It's like if you have first and goal at the 1 yard line and it's third down, you may call the greatest play ever knowing you're going to score, but you have to be prepared if you don't. You better have your kicking team ready right next to you on the sideline, ready to go basically preparing for that play to fail to have your next option up there. And I do the same thing when it comes to our lending. It's like, worst case scenario, we have to take this property over. I need to be ready. We need to have our team together. Even if they're not actively engaged yet, they're there, whether it's engineers or contractors or REO brokers or inspectors, just whatever, just be ready in case that happens. And you do enough of these, you're going to have a few fail.
I want to stay on the sports analogy, actually. Too bad we're running out of time here. So third and goal, perfect play ever, is everything goes according to plan. Payments come in, construction gets done, property gets sold, we reinvest, and voila.
Great. And you scored a touchdown.
But if you get stonewalled, you got to bring the kicking team in, and that's where you need to step in and do something about it.
Right. That's exactly correct.
Yeah, that's exactly where we live, too. So a percentage of deals go wrong. It's just the real world that we live in. We're lending money at higher interest rates because there's a little bit of speculative risk on these deals. And frankly, if we don't have a plan in place, they're going to fail. So failed projects actually are a good thing in our world.
I like it. I like the analogy a lot because even if you don't make that conversion, you can still bring the kicking team on and get some points on the board.
Correct.
That's not bad.
Three points is all right.
All right, we're going to go to break here in just a second. When we get back, we'll talk about literally how we built this up and how it's evolved. We'll be right back.
And now, back to the Noble Capital Radio Hour.
Welcome back to the Noble Capital Radio Hour. I'm your host, Chris Ragland. If you're just joining us, this week's financial topic is essentially building a new investment model. Normally, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Mr. Rami Navarro and Jaden Newman. Jaden's out of town this week, so we've got our guest star. He looks just as good as Troy Aikman, and his commentary is just as clever.
Yeah. Without the money, the celebrity status, and
Mr. Grady Collins.
And the obvious good looks.
And the obvious good looks. Yeah, my dad always said I had a face for radio, so here I am.
That's good. We've used that joke a couple of times. That's good, right? No photography going on in the studio today? Oh, man. Okay. All right. If you just joined us, we are three of the four partners at Noble Capital talking today about private lending, really our core emphasis of our entire company. It's our differentiator. Whether you're talking to us about traditional investments or retirement planning or just about anything else, money related, investment related, we're going to bring it back to private lending, chances are, because that's the core of our company. We've been doing this since 2002. We've survived the Great Recession. We've talked a lot about that, but you can hear about these stories and you can read other vignettes and small little things about us at our website at noblecapital.com. It's also a great way to get a hold of us if you want to come to one of our retirement blueprint dinners.
Yes, you can't say the word.
I know. I did really well there, right?
But these are great dinners.
They are great dinners.
Food's
really
good.
Cool.
I mean, you're going to go to a Fleming's or a Trulux, something nice, but the content's fantastic.
And let's be honest. The point of this is, do you like us?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, do we like you? Is it a good fit, right? Because we have a lot of clients throughout the state of Texas, primarily focused in Austin and Dallas. Those are the two markets where we have offices. So that's where we do our events. And Ramin, you gave us some dates on those. You want to do that one more time and let people know where they can go join us? And you do this, how do they get a hold of us and where are the dates?
All right. So we've got two coming up this week, actually. So we've got one in Dallas on Wednesday, June 13th, and we've got one in Austin on Thursday, June 14th. Both of these are at Fleming's Steakhouse. And to register, you actually just text the word SECURE, SECURE, to the number 313131. If you don't want to do that and you're just a Googler, just go to noblecapital.com, click on events, and you can register there as well.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So let's talk about private lending. Let's get some of the brass tacks down. What are some of the issues with this entire business model in general? And to me, one of the largest ones is market fluctuation, right? So if you're not prepared for what can happen in a downturn or a rapid change in a marketplace, you got no business being in this business.
So we've got a little bit of time in this segment, so I think it's important that we take a step back even from that. So why are we even there? Seriously, there was a time, remember sitting in a room trying to figure out how to cut more deals, do more deals, and make sure that they're nice looking deals where everybody's going to want to invest in them. There was and continues to be a very tired housing stock out there.
Mm-hmm.
Just property that needs to be recycled. And there's a bunch of people out there that actually want to do the work. They want to be operators and business owners and go and actually take the risk to reap the rewards. And we didn't want to be those people. So we were like, yeah, we could figure out a way to give you the capital. Okay. And then essentially insulate against that market downturn, that market volatility that you were just talking about. So there's a bunch of people that needed it, a bunch of people that wanted it, and there's so much demand out there because the property, the housing stock in Texas especially, is getting old.
But here's the other piece, and we alluded to it in the last segment. There's really not a large provider of that finance source. So you start to ask yourself why. And it's largely because this is a very difficult business to scale or to do properly locally. And we mentioned it, that bank, you know, that Wall Street bank, they are not going to drive by the house and take a look at it. You know, they're not. And actually, we joke about it in our industry. We actually call these drive-by inspections. They'll hire like a third party and they'll do a drive-by. And there's nothing better than seeing a photo where a bank said, "We checked on the property," and you can see like the rear view mirror of their car because they took it from inside the car.
Or worse, their thumb.
Or worse, on the bottom right, it says Google Maps.
Yeah, right. That happens, man. That's really sad and really true.
Speaking of that, how did your trip go yesterday?
Oh, that's good. So a couple of weeks ago, I went to San Antonio and visited a lot of our property down there. It wasn't yesterday. It was a couple weeks ago. That's how often I see Grady. And so it was really great. It was a really, really good trip. We got to see property in San Antonio, all over San Antonio, at different levels of completion, from like literally studs and people have taken a property and stripped it all the way back to on the market, beautiful, with a sign out front and for sale.
And that explains some of the reason why it's not scalable, because it's very hands-on.
Very much.
I mean, people wonder why some of these borrowers would pay, you know, higher interest rates than banks. It's not so much that they can't get the financing from the banks. It's that the banks don't have the yield to be able to give up to kind of service these loans and monitor these loans, because it takes a lot of work to do that.
Yeah, it sure does. I mean, we're talking about a significant difference between traditional consumer paper and the types of loans that we provide. These are construction loans, and it's really, really hard to scale and to do it correctly, right? And that's what we spent enormous amount of time, even taking the lessons that we learned from the Great Recession, and deploying that into a seasoned asset management, collateral monitoring, loan servicing world. That's what we do. Those are the reasons why we're able to do this, while we're able to do this at scale.
Yeah, we exist. Think about it for a second. If you're listening, you're like, well, what are these guys talking about? We exist, and we're writing loans at double-digit interest rates. Who in the world would take a double-digit interest rate?
Besides everyone in the 70s?
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And those people are out of the ecosystem for all intents and purposes now. So we've forgotten that.
Hey, now.
Whoa. That's right. Grady is also our resident gray hair. And he's got the least amount of gray of the three of us in here.
Oh, it's
sad.
But I also have the least amount of hair of the three of us in here, too.
But the most wit.
But so proportionately, I still probably am equal to y'all two.
Think about it, though. These guys are paying double-digit interest rates. If there was supply at the banks, because the banks could do this, you know, in quotations, could do this, the banks would be giving them the money. But the banks can't, because they fail on the street. They cannot get the properties right. So there is a tremendous amount of demand on the street. And that was the thing that we filled. That was that little section in the marketplace that we filled. We started giving these guys money. We did one, we did five, we did 10, we did 100, we're a couple thousand in. And now all of a sudden we've got a system and a process that we were able to package up and throw out to the investors of the world.
Yeah, so the term we use for banks, that the reason they fail, is called collateral monitoring.
Yep.
Banks don't do that very well.
No, they don't. They like recording something at a courthouse and saying, yeah, okay,
just
we're good.
Just make the payments and we're good.
We're good. So Romney just hit on a point that I think is really important here. We've only been addressing one side, and it was the demand side for the loans. There's a tremendous demand for this product in the marketplace. At the same time, in the middle, there really are not any institutional, quasi-institutional groups that are providing the product. But there's something else that's occurring. And this happened directly after the Great Recession, when everyone said, wow, I just lost 30% of my life savings and I was trying to retire next year. What do I do? But it's also happening now, when we're looking at stock markets at an all-time high. There's a demand for an alternative investment. So if you're an investor out there and you're sitting on a pile of cash, or you've got significant amount of your investment and your entire nest egg exposed to the marketplace, people are asking, what else is there? What's the alternative? Like, I can't just sit in cash and lose my money safely. I still want to earn. I still need to protect my principal. Where can I go? And that was the other side of this magic ecosystem that we entered in. And we said, oh, we've got this thing for you. You can actually invest your money in this private lending product. We can give you an enormous amount of security because it's tangible. We're not going to write it at market value. You're going to get it at 70 cents on the dollar, and you're going to clip a coupon of 6 to 8% annualized. That sounds pretty appealing to me. And that's ultimately where the other side came to play, because you match these two pieces up. You have this big, very large demand for these guys that are on the streets wanting to refresh housing inventory, and you have a very large demand, you know, of money out there that is saying, hey, I need a safe place to go because I no longer want to take the big risks.
Yeah, I think the coolest part about what we've been able to do is we've been able to take that back to Main Street and actually give it to the end investor, as compared to just allowing the largest hedge funds in the world to control your capital. So it's bringing it straight to the investor. Investor, you have a choice. Would you like to invest in this deal, in this fund? And more often than not, the answer is yes, because guess what? It's the supply and demand are now, you know, at parity, if you will, but there's also that protection. So yeah, I'll do that loan because there's 35% of protective equity. They're going to do that every single day if they're clipping a 7.5% coupon.
Yeah, not a bad option, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're looking at valuations. Jaden mentioned it on last episode. He was talking about, we woke up to, you know, the Italian banks getting jittery, and it literally upset our marketplace. I mean, you think about how, like, this, the world is really a big place, but it's also very, very well connected, which was what makes it feel so small. You have bankers in Italy disrupting the stock market. Like, is that literally okay with you? Are you okay with this? Like, think about the other things going on in the world right now, and you're saying, yeah, I know all of this can make a direct impact on me as an investor. I mean, think about that for just 2 seconds. And maybe it's because I'm from Texas and I don't like people touching my stuff, right? But it's like, I don't like the idea that a significant portion of my investment could be affected by what's going on with the politics and the bankers in Italy right now. That doesn't make me feel good.
Well, and that's one of the benefits of private lending with us, is you have some discretion over your investment. Your money is not just being managed by a financial institution that's subject to the whims and the movings of different markets and people's decisions and political turmoil.
Yeah, the fund that we have is very specific in what it can do.
Correct.
It is highly targeted. And Grady knows, because he actually works on the reports and looks at this every single month and really to a daily basis.
Yes.
In terms of where are we doing, where's the money going?
Using another football analogy, right? Why not? So here's one. What if the traditional investment vehicles that exist out there, you're essentially starting at the goal line and trying to march down the field 100 yards. When you jump in private lending, you can choose to jump in at the 30, 35, or 40 yard line, right? So you have a lot of, I'm reaching here, but you have a lot of that built-in. Yeah. And also that built-in room for error. That's what I'm talking about. That 30, 35 yards is room for error. Things could go wrong and you're still safe. Whereas if you're at the goal line, that's a safety.
Right.
That was terrible, but hey.
I mean, you tried, you know? You tried.
Got the point across.
I'm leaving, guys. Later.
Yeah. See you later, Mike. You dropped the mic and walked out on that one. That was it. Okay, look, we're talking about private lending if you just joined us today. And if you're interested and you don't know what private lending is or what it's about, well, we don't have time to rehash it again. So you're just going to have to go to noblecapital.com and check us out. But what else can you do, Romney?
Yeah, I think you should also consider, if you're reaching retirement or nearing retirement, you should consider coming to one of our retirement blueprint dinners. We've got a couple coming up in Austin and in Dallas. And you do that by texting the keyword secure, S-E-C-U-R-E, to the number 313131.
Hey, are we going to have a quinceañera this year as a company?
Well, no, it was like 3 years ago.
No, didn't we turn 16?
That would be DSCs.
Oh, my bad.
Quinceañera's 15.
Oh, yeah?
15.
Well, yes. 15, so it would have been last year then.
Yes.
Aren't we 16?
Which we had a little bit of that. It just wasn't a quinceañera.
It wasn't.
It was fun.
It was still fun. We did
my
throw
Spanish
a little bit of a party.
My Spanish is not very good, being from Louisiana.
Being from Miami, mine is all right.
Yours is okay. But look, we've been doing this for, 16 years. We've been in the private lending industry. So we've been doing this for a while. And what I wanted to bring this up is that this industry is achieving some form of stability. We're seeing many of very institutional players that are coming to play here now. And they're saying, hey, this is very interesting. And we have spent an enormous amount of time educating the industry, trying to participate at a very high level, at a national level, and saying, this is what's going on.
Dude, I know we're running out of time, daylight right now, but here's the thing. Grady actually worked in that space prior to joining forces with us 10, 11 years ago. I think you should talk a little bit about the differences between that, you know, big institutional banks and what we're doing right now when we come back.
Okay.
That was a great pregnant pause.
It was. That was pretty good. So we can definitely do that when we come back from the break here in just a second. But yeah, we are interested in talking about the differences between that type of banking and what we're doing in today's world. So again, talking about private lending today, if you have never listened to us before, we haven't mentioned it, but I wanted to bring it out there. You can also download us on podcasts. So you can do it through iTunes or Google Play or a couple of other things that I've never seen before, but you can do that online and listen at your leisure. We'll be right back.
Once again, this is the Noble Capital Radio Hour.
And we're back. This is the Noble Capital Radio Hour, and I'm your host, Chris Ragland, joined today by Mr. Romney Navarro and Grady Collins, the Chief Financial Officer for Noble Capital. Thanks again today, Grady, for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I didn't get to use the word reite on the show today. We've been doing that joke for a long time.
What is a reite again, Grady? Oh,
a real estate investment trust, as pronounced by the Northeast.
For those of you listening to the show, we're talking about REITs. And Grady pronounced it REIT. So,
and Middle America says REIT. Just REIT.
REIT.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway,
so we usually bring that joke up. But all right, if you just tuned in and you need a recap of what we've been talking about, we're discussing private lending, how we are utilizing a very unique alternative vehicle as an alternative to traditional investments. We're not knocking traditional investments. We're saying that you should also be considering private lending and make it a part of your portfolio if you haven't done that already. We do that. Noble Capital is an alternative investment company. We specialize in retirement planning, private lending, and real estate. So we bring the private lending product to our clients' portfolio. And we've been doing this for a number of years now, as we mentioned just a moment ago.
Mm-hmm. So we were actually... I posed a question, or I was telling Grady something, and then I cut him off. So my bad. But you lived the world of, you know, big banking, Wall Street type capital.
Yes, I worked for a Wall Street firm for a few years, and we were actually involved in this industry quite heavily, which is why that particular Wall Street investment bank no longer exists. I won't name names. And I think it's because they were investing in these types of products, or they didn't originate the loans, but they used their capital to purchase these loans. Their entire goal was to purchase as much as they could, package them up, sell them off for just yield. All they looked at is yield. They bought for yield without monitoring the collateral. Without monitoring the collateral on these high yield loans, a lot of the loans went bad. As everybody knows, the delinquency on commercial mortgage-backed securities, or even residential mortgage-backed securities, they call them all commercial, even though they may be residential houses. The delinquency in those really, really contributed to the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009.
And they were considered rated, too, at the time.
They were considered rated.
AAA rated paper.
Because they could adjust their packaging to change the risk profile of those certain ones to get them rated so they could sell them off, but it still didn't change the fact that they were loans that needed monitoring at kind of a hands-on local level, and they didn't do that.
Yeah, and I think they were counting on, and they did for a number of years, on the appreciation, right?
Appreciation of the value to cover up for their lack of monitoring the collateral.
And we get asked that question a lot, is what is Noble doing differently to prevent that type of an issue? And that really comes back to the cornerstone of asset-based lending. So there's two things. There's what Grady's talking about. We actively, proactively monitor the collateral at every stage of this property. From even before we close the loan, we're looking at plans, permits, budgets, scope of work. Like, an enormous amount of due diligence is happening up front. And then throughout the entire life cycle of this loan, we're monitoring it. Everything from, are they paying their taxes? Do they have insurance? Did they actually do the work they were going to say they're going to do? This is the work that we're talking about that most people don't consider when they say, oh, I'm going to get into this business as a lender.
And we also tweak some things going forward as we kind of have some market data and some market outlook into certain areas. We can tweak our LTVs if we see an area that's getting overheated or we're getting a higher concentration of these types of loans in this area. We can stop lending in there altogether, you know, or we can kind of tweak the LTV down?
That's the other half right there, is we also don't lend at retail lending. Right. We don't have the same level of exposure. We're not giving someone 97 cents on the dollar, which is what you get, you know, an FHA loan for. We're talking about 70 or less.
In 1999, I saw a few 125 cents on the dollar.
I saw them.
For disaster.
I watch people get cash at close.
How fun would it be? So we have this thing that we do in the office. It's called a postmortem. Whenever something doesn't go according to plan, we actually sit down and analyze it and beat it up. It to smithereens. What happened here? How fun would it be to actually let some of our clients come in, some of our listeners come in, and just hear an overview of a postmortem? This went right, this went wrong, this went right, wrong.
Yeah, maybe.
And this is what we did.
Yeah, and this is what we did as a result. Most of our underwriting updates and guideline changes comes out of these postmortem meetings. When we see a common thread that's happening in, you know, more than one time, we go, okay, let's not let that happen again.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. All right, I want to take us to the next segment, which gives Romney more anxiety than anything else I've ever seen. And that is...
I'm shaking.
Put your money where your mouth is. Traditionally, we have to describe the show in five words. But now we have a Seanvelope, thanks to our producer, Sean, who names everything after himself. And he edits the rules. So, Romney, what are we doing today?
All right, so this week's rules is we're still staying with five words. All right? But you got to incorporate the word noble.
So, exactly five words, and noble must be one of them.
I'll start it off.
Okay.
A noble strategy includes lending. Yeah. Yeah.
A noble strategy includes lending.
A noble strategy includes lending. Yeah.
Man, I'll tell you something that I really want to do here, but I need like some dead time to do it. I'm not going to have time to do that.
Let it rip, man. It's all about quick wits. Which I have very few of. So.
Grady, do you have any quick wits?
I have, and here's what I took from the show today. Your noble significant other decides furniture. That's what I was thinking the whole time as Sean on the street.
That's
it's
six,
like,
isn't it?
That's like nine.
That's not five words.
I'm the CFO. I have calculators in Excel. Noble significant other decides furniture.
Okay.
That's good.
Hey,
what I got from this.
Welcome to the show.
I haven't thought about furniture in 20 years. If it was up to me, I'd still have the same couch I had in college.
Yeah, if you've ever been to his house, you'll know what he means. Chris, what are you thinking of? You're actually writing over there. There's no writing involved. So actually, the way it always works out is I come up with something that is awesome. I always kind of tear the cover off the ball. Chris comes up with something real nerdy, and then Jaden nails it. He just hits it perfectly.
Did I not nail it?
I am going to destroy you today. You ready for this?
Go for it.
This is it. I'm totally high confidence. Here's mine. No obstacle besides lending envy.
But you did not use the word.
What's the first letter?
No obstacles.
Besides
minus the E.
Envy. No obstacle besides lending envy. N-O-B-L-E.
Okay, you win.
I win. I incorporated the word without incorporating the word.
Those are the rules.
I destroyed you.
But the word noble is not in the
Yes,
sentence.
It is. You can read it down. N-O-B-L-E. Hey, no obstacle besides lending envy.
They have a name for that, but it's not a word.
This is the funnest part of the show, but honestly, this is the part where we start having to wrap it up. Reach out to us, guys, if you're interested in learning about this private lending thing, how to incorporate it into your financial plan, how to incorporate it into your retirement plan. Easiest way to do it is to start at a retirement blueprint dinner. If not, come right into the office. If not, go to one of our events. You name it. Text the word SECURE, S-E-C-U-R-E, to 313131.
Grady, I wanted to say thanks a lot for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes. Yeah, it was really great.
It was a joy.
You can be Jaden's sub any day. In fact, we're thinking about just firing Romney and letting you take his place now.
By all means.
I'll need a little pay raise.
I think Romney just said a minute ago his favorite part of the show is when it's over.
Romney, was that my favorite
totally
part?
Totally think that's what you just said. I thought my you know, N-O-B-L-E strategy was pretty good.
No, that's a winner for sure.
It reminds me one time we had an intern whose favorite part of working for us was his cubicle was located close to the restroom.
Oh, God.
That's what his feedback was.
That was his feedback.
That was his feedback. Oh,
Alan,
boy.
I think it was
okay,
his
name. All right. Hey, it's been a lot of fun. I'm Chris.
I'm Romney.
I'm Grady.
And thanks for listening. You've been listening to the Noble Capital Radio Hour. We'll see you guys next week.